Steve. I got you checked in. You're in Merlin. Thank you.
Yeah, you found me on the roster. Like I'm 32 or 38 or something. Which one is it if you still have it in front of you?
Yeah, you are number 32.
All right. See, there we go. Very good. All right. Well, thanks for having me, and we try to check in. We can later otherwise. On Sunday, I had Kimber with an early check-in, so we're out poking around.
All right, Steve, and you are loud and clear.
I'm located, not that it matters on a repeater, but I'm located about a mile plus due east of the Highway 5 rest stops near Merlin. It slightly starts sloping up, so I actually look across all of Merlin and out towards CJ a little bit, down the Rogue River towards Hellgate and such.
Excellent. Sounds like you got a good view.
Yeah. I'm an active radio person, so I do the simplex stuff when I can, and then that, you know, really gets us an opportunity to play antennas, towers, power, whatever. Good old radio.
After that, yeah, I know a lot of people that on ham, they try to get their power level out to a lot of guys are running less than 1 watt and doing good.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Power is not the answer. Doubling it is barely noticeable on the receive end. But, you know, if you could pick up a 1 to 10, 10 dB, it's all the difference in the world. I would like to add that I am an amateur radio operator, WA6YSM, and I work DX quite a bit. That means anything off the continent, and the legal limit is 1,500 watts. And I do have a linear amplifier here, not to give you the power amplifier, that could do that easily and more, so that's kind of cool. Conditions have been pretty good lately, off and on, solar cycle 25 of our sun, and et cetera, et cetera. So that's the flip side of the other microphone here on the desk. They look the same. I have to be careful.
Copy that. Yeah, lucky for me, my ham radio one's got a keypad on it, so I can usually tell them apart. But by now, I'm sharing an antenna with them, so I have to remember to switch the coaxial switch.
Gotcha. So that would imply a dual-band antenna with monoband radios, two each, I'm thinking. The other way around,
I've got a high-gain dual-band collinear.
Right. Very good. Do you work HF?
I do, but not amateur. I work HF with the Civil Air Patrol. I need to get my general license so I can use my gear. I've got a rig set up, and I don't have an antenna set up yet, but as soon as I get my general, I'll get that all set up. I don't have room for a horizontal antenna here, so no long wires. It will have to be a vertical of some type.
Yeah, well, if you can hook up a wire 16 feet on one side and 16 feet on the other, at then or any elevation, and hook a coax to it, you'll do pretty darn good on 20 meters, which is considered the international band. It's been open a lot lately, all around the world.
That's cool, yeah. The stuff I do is lower than that, but some of the people I work with, they go 60 meter, even 90 meter.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. I realize. You said Civil Air Patrol, correct?
Roger that.
I know they have a 2 meter. Well, let's call it VHF repeater in the area, so you're probably familiar with that.
Absolutely. It is encrypted now.
Oh, okay, interesting. Well, it's in my building on Elk Mountain. I own Siskiyou Communications. It's been in there for free for 20 years. And I've had to fix it two or three times. It's a Motorola Quantar, power supply issue once and all that. I guess it can go encrypted automatically over the air. I think it would be end-to-end and just pass through the repeater, I believe. Does that make sense?
I know that.
Yeah, as opposed to a code making the repeater okay. Because I know nobody else had the key to the building, so it certainly wasn't a programming change.
So it's just we swapped out all of our radios, and all of our new radios that we have are all encrypted, even HTs.
Yeah, Motorola or Bendix 10? Might be Harris.
I believe the handhelds are Motorola's.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, they could have even been Harris, which is a huge supplier to the military, and they got into the two-way radio side of things. Gosh, I don't know. They've always been into it, but about 10, 20 years ago came on strong. All right, well, thank you for the conversation. It's part of what radio can be, right? But, yeah, as far as that HF thing, you know, like I said, 16 feet, 16.2 or 16.4 on each side or something. It's a lot of fun just to tune around and see what happens. If you're really interested, I'll mention this anyway. If you go to DX Watch, just do a search, DX Watch. It'll come up. It'll be a black Dymo label tape-looking thing. There's some drop-downs. I don't remember the name. You know, search or something. Drop down to HF, and another window will open up showing you all the frequencies that you might want to look at. If you just click on 14 megahertz, then it will show you real-time. Anybody in the world who chooses to post what they're up to on that site, it would be your call sign, who you're talking to, because you entered that. It'll show you the flag of that person, and they're all over the world. What frequency, it'll automatically timestamp and leave a place for a comment. It's called a spotting network. So if you were to bring that up, you could look over and see, oh, here's so-and-so in Spain on 14240. Oh, gosh, here's Nicaragua on 14180. You could go to that frequency and save yourself time from tuning back and forth and possibly miss him. And then it's like picking low fruit on the tree.
Happy that. Yeah, I know a lot of people do DXing. I had a real interesting story about that. I got a call from Aircraft Control. I used to work for the FAA. I was a system specialist for them. My primary discipline was radar, but I did everything else too, including ILS and communications. But yeah, I got a call from the tower, and they had a message from a postcard from somebody who DXed the local non-directional beacon, the NDB, at Medford Airport.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Yeah, that's interesting stuff. I travel some. Matter of fact, I'm leaving Friday on vacation, flying, and I don't know where I'm going. It's a secret. It's kind of fun. But, yeah, approach beacons and frequencies in the air, you know, whether it's the, what, low 300s and high 200s or something. I don't remember all that. Maybe mid 200s, et cetera, et cetera. But, no, I'm VORs. You know, all that stuff's interesting. You know tons about it, and I'm honored to know someone who does that. I knew about the microwave circuit that went from Hayward to Seattle, and there's a hop of that on King Mountain, but right behind us here, of which the same mountain, I used to own a radio site also, but I sold it because I retired 4 years ago. But, you know, I appreciate and very interested in all aspects of everything radio.
We refer to, and I'm retired now, but they refer to that microwave system as the backbone. It connects all the different aircraft control centers in the nation are all connected by that.
Yeah. And at King, there's a standard, it's not just RF, or excuse me, microwave passing through. It's, you know, it's a full-on site. You know what I'm talking about, those square shapes with all those fairly stubby, awful darn strong, long, wide diameter, antennas and all that. You know, very impressive. I've been in the building once. I went, drove by, and the door was open. So I asked the guy if he was looking around. He said, sure, and et cetera.
Yeah, it's interesting. That site gets hit. All those sites up there get hit every year by the meth head copper stealers.
Run that by me again. The who what?
A bunch of meth heads that go around and steal copper off of facilities. They were stripping the lightning arresting cables every year up there, and then they started going after our counterpoises. They damaged it trying to pull it out of the ground, and then they started going after everybody's diesel fuel. They did some environmental damage even up there. One of the TV stations has a stand tank on a 50-gallon drum on a stand. to get quickly fuel their snowcat, and they punched a hole in that and couldn't capture all the 50 gallons. A lot of it was still on the ground. They had to deal with the EPA on that.
Yeah, that was a significant era when the copper was going. They were even hitting people's in progress of being built homes. You know, going to rip out all the wall Romex before the walls were in copper for PEX. And grounding and such, as you had mentioned at radio sites, that became an issue. They saw those copper bars. KOBI on King lost 1,000 gallons of diesel, meaning it was stolen. It wasn't put on the ground over a about two or three different runs with a truck, and they finally busted that whole ring of people up on, called it Upper Sunny Valley Road or something, the road that continues south of King but could go to King, east of Highway 5, north of Sexton. But yeah, they actually got busted. They stole a generator off of Wolf Peak at a cell site, too.
Yeah, I remember when they got busted. They knew who they were for a very long time. The FBI, they had video of them. They knew who they were. But they finally got DNA evidence on a cigarette butt that they left up there. In fact, it was not the FAA site. They left that cigarette butt. It's funny, the first year, the FAA tank up there has got 500 gallons in it. And for that site, and the first year they only stole 250 gallons, and one of the guy investigators, well, why they only stole 250 gallons? I said, because they only had 550 gallon drums.
Yeah, copy. Okay, I had to laugh. I didn't know about a cigarette butt DNA thing. Being involved with radio sites around, I used to own 7 and responsible for stuff in like 36 of them or whatever. I had a radio shop in town from 84 to 86, Siskiyou Communications. I usually have more insight to most people on GMRS or hams to this kind of stuff behind the scenes. You beat me. I knew they busted them, but now you told me about DNA and a cigarette butt. Bravo. Well done.
You know, it's amazing. But my old shop back in the 90s, we had a shop here in Medford that was on the airport, and we had our vehicles parked there and a little building with lots of tools and test equipment. And some morons went in there. They broke in, and they stole some test equipment. They left the most valuable test equipment. They stole a lot of the cheaper stuff and all the little suitcase tool kits and all that. And they stole a bunch of the vehicles. And they actually found one of the idiots with a government vehicle parked in their driveway full of our equipment.
Kind of a dead giveaway, huh? Well, nice to get it back. I thought you were going to say they found it in Never to Return Gulch, upside down, tires gone, and all the equipment as well, and with bullet holes.
Yeah, you talk about generator getting stolen. I was working down in Nevada. We had a site. It was called Eldorado Eldorado RCAG, Remote Communications Underground, which is what's on King Mountain also. That's the backbone, what do they call that, RMVR, whatever it is. Anyway, it's a repeater, microwave repeater, but it's also a communication site for the center. Seattle Center uses it. And they finally quit putting up. Every year we'd put up new lightning arresting, and every year they'd steal it. And they finally quit putting up lightning arresting. Figured, well, our towers aren't as tall as everybody else's. We're probably the last one to get hit. And as far as I know, they haven't gotten hit by lightning since they quit putting up the lightning arresting. But I don't know. I don't think it's real smart. But I guess they figured out the radios are cheaper than the copper.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Well, that all seems to have eased off. I haven't heard of anything like that in a long time, in town or otherwise, radio sites or whatever. All right, well, hey, it's been a real pleasure talking with you. This is good. Every once in a while, someone in a similar business, and we could talk about stuff. Often on 8-1, well, not often, but from time to time, HF, I'll stumble across somebody anywhere, you know, usually in the country, who might have been in the same business, and occasionally down in the Bay Area where I spent 10 years, all the mountains down there and stuff. Yeah, what mountaintop and who's who, and oh yeah, that old repeater, that was the original, and whatever became a so-so, well, he passed, you know, et cetera. We could start talking about, I'm 70 years old, we could start talking about tubes.
Roger that. I grew up on tube type radars. I really love working on tube type radars. You had to be a real technician to work on that stuff. Component level maintenance. I loved it. Great troubleshooting. You could tell right away who was a good technician and who was not.
I have a 10, maybe it's 11 gig red Klystron by Varian. Varian, brand new. About 10 feet away on a display case.
Wow. I remember we put this, I was here, I was actually the manager. They brought me down here specifically for this purpose for Southern Oregon because we were installing the radar at the airport. And the Klystrons and those, there were three different ones. Well, one was, one was Raytheon. I can't remember who the other two manufacturers were, but they cost about $165,000 each. The ones up on King Mountain, back when that was an old tube-type radar, those were about $300,000 a pop.
Wow, I had no idea that kind of dollar amount. I took this Klystron to the Ham Radio Club one time on their every third Tuesday meeting. I'm the president, and we give demonstrations. I brought that, or presentations. I brought this thing in. I said, look at this thing. I explained what it was, kind of how it worked, but its applications. And its early versions of pulsed microwave, magnetrons and such, even the Klystron about radar. And I explained how in World War II, this changed the face of the war in that the Brits had figured out how to make a magnetron. We had not. It was snuck over in a briefcase with a person, like a tourist on a ship that made it, and then went back to New Jersey, the Bell Labs and a couple others who decided who would reverse engineer, would make the magnetron, and we sent modules of radar back to London as Brits as finished product. They didn't want to do it over there. They figured they'd get bombed, they'd steal the secrets. And that helped change the face of the war because they could see planes at night and even submarines underwater to a certain degree. It changed the face of the war. I was holding one in my hand.
Yeah, Roger that. Most of the radars I worked on had magnetrons. Some of the long-range radars had what's called an amplitron, which amplified from the magnetron. And, yeah, the big magnet. We had titanium tools of those big magnetrons because it would jerk a steel tool right out of your hand and damage that very expensive tube.
Right, that makes sense. Never thought of it. Cool. Very good, very good. Yeah, and then there's microwave amplifiers, traveling wave tubes.
Roger that. They're used for other things as well. They're also used for delay devices, for like moving target indicator.
Well, you got me on that one. Here's another story where the rest of the people who might be listening might be watching TV. When Pearl Harbor happened, radar was in its early development, and it was a line going across the screen where how far it went to the right was distance and how tall the pulse was, like a spectrum analyzer. How tall the pulse was how strong it was. And if you see a cluster, it's a little bit spread out. Well, it was seen on the early radar, but it was assumed that it was a small fleet that was scheduled to come from the States. And they paid no attention, and that was Pearl Harbor. I've been there. I've seen the radar. They told me the story. They simulated what the display would have looked like. So I guess the guy who saw it must have survived.
Yeah, a lot of things that – I've missed opportunities to do things different back then. One of the most interesting one was that submarine picked up the Japanese fleet a week before they attacked, and they were ordered directly not to report to Pearl Harbor that information and report it to DC only.
Okay. Hang on. Yeah, I got the right microphone. Well, I wonder why it apparently stopped there.
micromanagement, just like in Vietnam. You know, I had friends that were on swift that maintained the radios on the swift boats, and the swift boats took fire, and they had to call back to the base, and the base would call to Saigon, and Saigon would call to D.C. to get permission to return fire. And the reason I found out about that was a friend of mine that was working on those swift boats. I said, well, what'd you do? He said, well, I changed all the radios every night. I said, they're not bad. No, they were fantastic radios, but they were full of bullet holes. I go, what? Yeah, they were getting shot. Every time they went out on a sortie, the radios would get shot. I said, the VC had snipers are shooting? No. The guys are shooting their own radios. I said, what the hell? Yeah, that's because if they lost radio communications, it became the senior guy's decision.
Right. Okay. Well, there you go. Staying a step ahead, huh? Very cool. All right, I got one last one for you. So I was at Pearl Harbor on Pearl Harbor Day. Let's just guess 1978. I took a vacation, and I had a friend who was stationed over there, and I wanted to see the island. I was actually backpacking. And I was allowed on the base. And he worked in the torpedo area. We went into his location, and he had a cover off of one and showed me some guts of some electronics and stuff. And that was pretty cool. I can't imagine that happening nowadays. But he was able to take me down in a sub, and I saw the two positions where they steer it, and this, that, the other, this, that. The other. When we went by where was the radio room, which I thought would be cool to see, he told me ahead of time, you're not going to see the radio room. So it was cool to be on there, but I didn't get to see that. We came up top, and 10 minutes later was the afternoon tribute to the occasion. The entire PA systems and horns and all that all over the base had a spoken ceremony followed by some music that sounded very low fidelity out of those horns. It didn't last really long because business had to be as usual. I'm sure there was other events around, but that was my moment. I got to see that and come up out top, and witness the rest. But I didn't see the radio room.
Wow, that's cool. My son reported in to his good position. He's in the Air Force over there, and he just checked in today.
Well, there you go. Small world. Wonderful. All right, man, I'm going to let you go. Wonderful conversation. Literally, we've lived our life doing this stuff. we can go on, and I really enjoy it. It's all I've ever done in my life, okay? So, and I'm 70 years old and retired, and so I'm an old ham sitting around talking about old equipment. Why not? I'll bet this is the longest communications discussion or exchange that's been on the GMRS since it was put up. And by the way, this repeater is in my building, also up on Gilbert. And I very much appreciate helping Jeff get it together. I've donated duplexers and tuned radios and put up antennas and, hard line and got him into KOBI 700 Phoenix because I know the people. And, oh, my God, So, occasionally I get to use the radio. How about that? Usually I'm not even around. I was a late check-in. Well, you know that. I came out here and you were just finishing.
Yeah, well, good talking to you. You have a good night.
Yeah, let me add this. Kimber and I are very good friends as well. And we have common interests even in music. She was in a band. I've been in a band. And we're going to actually play some music together. We've discussed that in the last 2 to 3 weeks to get serious about it, to bother. So that's kind of cool, too. She appreciates me what I do with radio, and I appreciate what she does, for the GMRS. There used to be 100 check-ins, and she keeps all that going and heading up the post and AMRON and everything else. So I wanted you to know there was a win-win connection and support team on that side of it, too. And then here you are doing the net, so thank you as well.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Buddy, take care. WRMB 624. Bye-bye.
WRDG 580, I'm out.